You know what? Well, we hit record and BK takes off.
He leaves. Steve. He's a ninja. He's a Jewish ninja. Right? He's a ninja.
I'm so delighted. The background was giving me this aura.
He's a Jewish ninja. He can vanish.
Jewish. You know what? For now on, it's going to be called Jewish Ninja Incorporated. I like it, man. Steve, BK, welcome to the Protectors Season 4. Very special season because this season is going to bring me into my 50s, I hope. I hope we're going to be able to just do this all the way out until January 9th, 2023. What's going on, guys?
Outstanding. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats on that. You're part of the Silver Savage community, which we'll talk about here shortly.
You know what? Let's talk about that right now. Hey, guys.
Right, I'll let BK take the lead on this because he is the godfather of the Silver Savage right now.
So everybody knows where we're coming from. BK and Steve have Masada Tactical, and BK is the main man. Steve's jumped in there. We'll talk more about both of them in a minute. But today we're going to talk about, hey, you know what? What's going on with local training? What can we do to find professional training for not just the operator types out there, but the civilians? That's kind of like a market I really like. So let's get into that. What are we talking about? The silver ninjas, the silver Jewish ninjas.
There's a lot of ninjas and savages going on. Well, I think they feed into each other. So just I kind of share your boat. I'm 46 years old, so I'm not far behind you. And we found out that people like us, they still have fight in them. We're not over the hill necessarily. And what can we do to kind of optimize that? So the idea initially about 2 years ago came up to do a podcast. Well, we're going to bring on experts in medicine, experts in retirement and finances, experts in dating. I've been divorced 3 times. I suck at this marriage game. So now I need all the advice I can get.
I'm the longest relationship he's had.
That is very true. And
BK, I want to stop you right there because if you should not be giving the advice on dating.
No. I should be getting it.
Find the expert. Okay.
He needs it. That's why we're doing it.
Yep. So we decided we're going to start a community around that. So for warrior men, and not to be sexist, but initially at least it's going to be a man in our age group. And, you know, let's do stuff together to enhance each other. So anything discussing self-defense and tactics to, you know, testosterone levels to, you know, where to retire when we, you know, hit those millions.
And that's one thing about, you know, there really isn't a lot out there for the plus 40 category. Steve, how old are you, man?
I will be 42 in a few months.
Oh, there we go. So, yeah, but there's, you know, there's not a lot when it comes to like everything I see now is like 20s and 30s and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of the even the veteran community and LEO community, man, a lot of us came in post 9/11. You know, right. I came in, when 2000 in law enforcement and military in the 90s. But, you know, that community is starting to hit, they're almost about to hit their 40s.
Yeah. You know? And that was the goal. How do we get that community together? And, you know, we having our sights on bigger things. We want to do retreats and events. Let's all go hunting together, you know, and share stories and, you know, drink a lot of whiskey together. I mean, I don't know.
Well, you know, one thing you guys brought up too is like before the show, we were talking about relationships and a lot of us in this community and, you know, the protector community isn't just, hey, you're the hardened vet, you're the operator, you're this. The protector community is just people that's like, hey, you know what? I want to do something more, not just for myself, but the people out there. I can have a deal with a handshake and I know whoever I'm talking to is going to respect me and they're going to really, you know, go forward with that. So having a community where you can get together where it's not about the almighty dollar sign, but it's about building and building and building. And yeah, you're going to make some money in there because it is a business in a way. So yeah, but yeah, man, it's about building a community and it's about supporting each other.
And not just that, Jason, one of the focuses too, and it comes in BK, although he's a brother of mine, he's been a mentor and I've learned from him and we learn from each other, but it is exactly that. For us older those of us in the protector community to be mentors to that younger generation. Because as we know, as times change, tactics change, you know, policies change, et cetera. But we see that cycle where it's cyclical when some things come back. So we want to be those mentors to those who have yet to come, those who are still younger and doing it, kind of like we've been to each other, BK and I, and bring that same relationship as well. You know, not just all these old dudes getting together talking about their prostates and how they have to pee every 20 minutes and they can't trust their farts anymore, but trust, you know, being mentors to the younger community is something that BK does, you know, for young men and women going into the Israeli military. I do it for young men and women going into the Marine Corps and other military branches. So that's one of the things we want to unite too, that to show them that as you get older, you're not out of the fight, you're actually wiser and have refined that fight.
Can hear you, Jason.
Helps if I turn my mic on. This is the professional, the Professional Protectors Podcast. I'm over here adjusting cameras and everything while these guys talk. But you know what? This is the raw protectors, man. We're not going to go with this edited out version. This is real life. But I want to know, what is your background, BK and Steve?
I'll let BK start.
All right. So born and raised in Israel, which is why I speak funny. Served a total of 21 years in the military, 4.5 of them active in a counterterrorism, counterintelligence type unit. And then I was still a reservist. I moved here in 99, but I would still go to Israel every 6 months and do my reserve duty. Kind of kept me in the mix, allowed me to scratch my itch a little bit and, you know, feed my patriotism in that sense. But since moving here, I'm a big fan of serving the country you live in. And I've been in America since 99, as I said. I tried joining the military here, but they told me because I have dual citizenship, I can't get security clearance. Which I don't know if it was BS or not, but bottom line is that they say you can't go the special operations route. And I'm like, well, what's the point then? And so I didn't do that. I went to school instead and got my degrees in counterterrorism and international security. And what do I do now? I started Masada in 2007, teaching self-defense, and then branched from there to working with law enforcement, and branched from there to having a security company, and from there working with healthcare. And along the road, I got credentialed as a law enforcement officer. So I'm a police officer in Alabama. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Israeli that lives in Maryland that's a cop in Alabama. I think I got that marker cornered. And I'm a medic in Baltimore County. That's it.
That's it. That's pretty cool, man. You know, what is their basic training like? What is their training like in the Israeli military? I want to know that. Because isn't it almost like a conscription where you have to do like 2 years?
Yeah, it's not almost. It is. Everybody serves. Men do 3 years. Women do 2 years. It depends on where you serve. So everybody's going to get, like, let's say, this is the thing about Israel. They'll take everybody. So in America, for example, if you have any kind of medical disqualifying, you know, issue, you will not make it. In Israel, you can be blind, deaf, autistic, missing all limbs. They'll find a job for you. You autistic, that means you see things the way I cannot. So you probably can analyze documents different than I can, you know, so you're going to be possibly intelligence, right? You can't see, you know, but you can type or you can answer phones. And, you know, if you're deaf, you can make coffee. I don't know. There's a job for everybody. So if you're going to be in a clerical position, your basic training may be very simply 3 weeks of this is the military rules and regs. And that's about it. All the way up to, if you're infantry, your basic training is about 4.5 months. Then you have advanced infantry training for about 2.5 more months. And then if you go to special operations route, it's going to be about a total of 14 months of training before you become operational.
I'm over in Israel. I'm looking around and I see, I'm not there yet. I'm going to go visit, but you know, I'm seeing people walking around, they got their M4s, AR-15s. And they got the mags out and stuff like that. Is that like something you have to carry around? Is that so? If I'm seeing those people, are they the ones that are currently serving, or is that just kind of like, hey,
yeah, no? So when you enlist, they give you a rifle and they tell you literally the words my drill sergeant said is, "This is your girlfriend. You take it everywhere with you. So you go home and leave on a weekend. You take it with you." So that's where you see guys. I remember sitting in a movie theater, jeans and a t-shirt, and an M4 between my legs, and just watching a movie, and it's normal.
That's everybody in Texas, though.
That's true. That is true. And I'm hoping soon to be Virginia.
That'd be nice. I'll move.
So yeah, that's about it. Everybody goes through some sort of training. And it's all about aggression also. That's a key component. You take 18-year-old knuckleheads, you can't teach them skills. Like everybody thinks everybody gets Krav Maga, let's say, and becomes an expert. The reality is, even as an infantry, so my unit was part of an infantry reconnaissance team. So even as an infantry, all you're doing is, this is how you strike with your rifle. That's it. That's the extent of Krav Maga. And all they're trying to teach you is be the aggressor, never be the victim.
And well, that kind of brings us into the whole training aspect of it too. It's like, you know, and Steve, you were a Marine, right?
Yes, sir. Marine.
Oh, my. Oh, sorry. You were not a Marine. You're still a Marine.
Still a Marine. Yes.
You were an Army. Civ-Div. Yeah, brothers. Tell us about your background.
So I was actually born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, put on a Marine uniform at the age of 10 in a Marine cadet program. As soon as I turned 17, lied to my mom, got her to sign the papers so I could leave early and join the Marine Corps. She thought I was joining the reserves and going to college. And you know, the day I left the boot camp, I said, I'll see you, you know, when I see you. But I just had to get out of the city. Different Marine Corps then, because we were a peacetime military. Wanted to go into security forces, ended up going into ordnance, which I ended up enjoying. I got to do different things like military police. I was a team leader on a FARP team, forward arming and refueling points, which, you know, let me deploy to different theaters of operation. I deployed on peace enforcement missions in the Balkans, supported GWAT and when it happened, because I was actually deployed in the Balkans during the 9/11 attacks. And that's obviously when the world changed, you know. After the Marine Corps, when I EAS'd, I joined the Maryland National Guard because I wanted to go into an infantry battalion, joined a scout sniper platoon in the Maryland National Guard. At the same time, started my law enforcement career. Been in law enforcement for over 20 years now, and I've worked in every facet from deep undercover work, tactical operations. I've been a medic, a sniper. I actually heard your name, I think I mentioned to you, when I was working undercover doing human trafficking stuff. For a federal task force, which
kind of want to hear the story about that one. How did Jason's name come up?
It wasn't trafficking.
I promise I wasn't.
No, but it was just the name mentioned at the time because of the agency I was working with. I signed a lot of non-disclosures, so I won't mention agencies or anything like that. Still active as a police sergeant, waiting on my next surgery. I seem to get injured in the line of duty a lot because I like to lead from the side. You know, I'm always there by my troops. I don't sit behind a desk. I don't believe in that. But I met BK over 15 years ago. It was love at first punch. And he can tell you that story. We've been working side by side, integrating Israeli-based tactics and American tactics and bringing that training to civilians, law enforcement, and military. I've traveled with him to Israel, trained with top-tier units over there because of him. I'm an Israeli at heart. I'm 1% Jewish, my best 1%, I like to say. And when you go, Jason, you're not going to want to come back because I didn't want to come back. I loved it over there. But been working with BK ever since. He's my brother from another mother. And, you know, we love building those relationships, training people in this protected community. We truly believe in it. We believe in those relationships. We're ready to, you know, if we had to lay down our lives, but we're all about letting the enemy lay down the lives for their country. So.
Well, you know, the thing about we've all went to a basic training and we've all had basic skills. And a lot of the civilian populace thinks, hey, you know what? BK was in the Israeli military. He's probably like a ninja. Steve was a Marine. He'd probably like kill you with a K-bar from 1,000 miles away. But the reality is, if you don't go and train more and become more proficient and continuously train, like me, I'm still an LEO. I still qual every quarter. But I always go to the range. I always shoot like I'm going to shoot. I need to continuously train. And if you're not doing it, you're really doing a disservice to yourself. The thing is, I like to know that civilians are getting competent training. And they need it. You know, when I became when this whole COVID thing started, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start teaching my friends basic pistol. And I'm also going to get it so they can get their CCW. So I went and I did the NRA instructor thing. And in order to get the NRA instructor thing, you have to go to the basic class. So I'm sitting in the basic class and there's a couple that's in their 70s. You got people who are, you know, different political views all over, but there's so many different people that are picking up a firearm right now They go to a basic course. They think they're trained enough, but they are absolutely not. And they need courses. They need courses that they could, for one, afford, and two, that are local. So I like seeing local training that could be that's affordable. So let's talk about Masada Tactical and talk about that inception and about kind of what you bring to the table for the civilian populace.
So I 100% agree with you. First of all, I also had to go through the NRA instructor certification to be able to teach in Maryland, right? Maryland is very tricky in the licensing processes and so forth. And I'll be honest, with all due respect to the NRA, that class was somewhat of a joke. There wasn't too much going on. This is a gun, and essentially you got to learn how to teach it their way. So what Steve and I decided we're going to do, we got to bring a little more value to this training. We got to make it a little more real. So we essentially, like Steve alluded to earlier, we took my Israeli background and his American background, and we put it together because Israeli tactics, they're great. They've been tested over and over again for the past 70 some years. But culturally, there's a lot of bumping heads when you try to teach it in America. It doesn't fit, right? So we adapted it. We adjusted it. We created a cool hybrid program, I think, that is beneficial, obviously, to the law enforcement side. But again, most of our clients are civilians. And you know what better way to learn how to defend yourself than put yourself in a realistic environment? Now, my biggest beef personally is, and I had these discussions with a few of our friends, is all these companies that have the word tactical in their name, but have nothing tactical about them. And that sets the wrong expectation. You have instructors that are uncredible. You have a lot of people that are great operators but can't teach for shit, right? And you have other people that are great instructors but don't have the experience. And there's very few people out there, I think, that really bring the operational background. We have the experience. We've been there. We've done that. And the ability to teach and transfer that knowledge. And I'd like to think we're one of those.
Well, that's one thing about the training world and instructing world is, you know, I'd like to think I know a few things here and there, especially when it comes to education. But teaching college, I teach college on the side. I tell you, man, it's a different world when you're trying to get someone to learn something. And then when you're trying to get them to learn a skill that's going to potentially save their lives and the lives of others, that is it's a very different aspect. When you're taking a civilian who's only picked up a pistol in one of these NRA courses or something else like that, where they do essentially to say, don't shoot yourself, and point the barrel the other way. You're lucky if you get an instructor who's going to actually take you to the range and let you shoot. But to take them from never picking up a gun to picking up a gun to becoming proficient takes a lot of patience. So you could be Johnny Delta SEAL, Marine, Coast Guard, who else? A Space Force operator, and still be the best in your game. But when it comes to teaching practical shooting skills and practical skills to a civilian, it might not be your niche. It might not be your market.
And I think you're touching on a great point, Jason. And Steve and I actually just did a video about it recently. I think in America, and this is one of the biggest differences between how Israelis shoot and Americans shoot, right? In America, you learn how to shoot. In Israel, you learn how to fight with a gun. You know, going back to that old aggression and mindset standpoint. So when I teach a shooting class, and Steve has obviously assisted in many of them and actually taught many of them, I don't teach you about trigger squeeze or, you know, breathing control or even sight alignment necessarily, because it's not going to happen in a real fight. As someone that's been involved in lethal force events, I can't tell you one time that I saw sights. I can't tell you one time I had two ends of the gun. I mean, at least not initially. So we're teaching here in America, we teach people how to pass a qualification course. We teach them how to pass a test. We don't teach them how to, this is what's going to happen when shit hits the fan. So when we do our classes, we try to do a lot of stress inoculation, anything from just basic fatigue, go run 50 meters, come back and now shoot at the target, to put them in scenarios behind barricade, odd shooting positions, maybe strike a pad for 30 seconds and then engage a target, run through a gauntlet as if you're running through a crowd. How many officers do you know learn active shooter response, but never had to run through a crowd on the range and engage a threat after, which is probably what's going to happen in an active shooter response, right?
So, I did, but it was in Israel.
So exactly. In Israel, we teach it from a suicide bomber interdiction standpoint, but the same tactic, right? So that's where I think a lot of the discrepancies sit right now.
Well, you know, I'm taking a look at your courses right now, and you're actually really decently priced. I'm not going to tell you the prices online right now, but handgun qualification and Maryland concealed carry and wear, where you actually have to learn concealed carry concepts. A lot of people don't understand having a concealed carry permit is awesome. It's great. You know, get a CCW. The thing is, not walking around with this big brick that everyone goes, oh, that guy's got a gun on him. And because the big deal is to be that person that's not showing, that's being concealed. There's a big difference between out of the waistband holsters, inside of the waistband holsters, drawing from a holster, returning the gun to the holster, and not shooting your balls off when you're getting there. So there's a lot of different techniques that you really have to learn. Picking up a pistol is a lot of responsibility. Pulling the trigger can change everybody's lives, yourself including, and that comes down to liability, comes down to getting sued and everything. And if you just say, hey, you know what, I went to BRA, concealed carry permit, whatever it is, and I got that, but I never practiced. And then all of a sudden you shoot someone, you do something stupid, you don't know the practicalities of law. There's a lot to this game of protecting others and protecting yourself.
Playing devil's advocate, though, Jason, and I agree with you 100%, but just playing devil's advocate, there's something to be said about knowing too much, right? When we get into that situation, if we start overanalyzing things, it's like, oh, what's going to happen later? Am I going to end up in jail and stuff like that? And we see it with law enforcement all the time, right? One luxury we don't have under stress is time, right? So sometimes you got to find that fine balance between, okay, you got to get the big picture, but you also have to keep it as narrow as possible so you make the right decision quickly.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. The thing is, like, sometimes with the civilian, they don't understand what they're getting themselves into. And a lot of times they may be too afraid to carry. They may get that concealed carry permit. They may have done all this, but they're like, you know what? I'm going to leave that gun at home because it's kind of still scary.
And that's one of the things we emphasize. And I know I emphasize too, even with officers, when they're off duty, I'm like, why are you carrying that firearm? Are you going to be proactive or is this reactive? Is it for self-defense or is it for self-offense? Are you going to protect others or just yourself and your families? You know, my family knows that if something goes down, we have a drill. My wife's going to grab the kids. She's going to run away because she knows I'm going to work my way into Valhalla. You know, I swore an oath I'm going to protect because I'm a protector. That's my mindset. I can't help it. You know, it's going to happen. Whether it's with a four-core firearm, I'm going to battle to protect those who can't protect themselves. BK is the same way. We know this. But this is why we try to emphasize to people, like you said, Jason, like, why are you carrying this firearm? And are you prepared to use it in the manner in which you're going to wield it? You know, if it's self-defense, then train for self-defense. If it's for offense, then train for offense as well. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And when you look at these training organizations, they don't emphasize the mental aspect of it enough, you know, and that's something that we do incorporate. But again, you know, it's going to come down to the individual. You know, you don't know fire is hot until you stick your finger in it and get burned for the first time, you know, so we don't know how we're going to react. You know, the first time I was ever engaged in a high stress situation involving firearms, I pissed myself, you know, in the military. You know, I didn't know it. I was giggling like a schoolgirl. But I did what I had to do in my defense. I just peed a little bit. But I was very hydrated. But again, we don't know how we're going to react. And you try to prepare the best you can in the civilian population, especially because they're not exposed to it like we are regularly. They need to incorporate that into their training as well. Not just the physical training, but the mental training as well.
Well, I like bringing the family variable into there. I like to see training not just be about the person carrying a gun. I like to be about, you know, game plan what your idea is and what's going to happen.
Come to one of our courses. We do that.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. And I am going to come to one of your courses. You guys are local. I'll be coming down there. And I will pay. So I'm not trying to get some free.
I'll charge you.
Of course you're going to charge me. This is Protectors Podcast.
He's charging you.
Well-funded podcast here, right? No, but that's the thing is you have to take in these and you have to game plan it. You have to always be just running scenarios in your head. But it doesn't have to become your sole purpose in life. It doesn't. But the more you're trained, the more it becomes second nature. It becomes something that's like, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that scary. And it's not going to control my life. especially when you're talking about someone who's been victimized, whether they've been robbed, they've been assaulted, they have had their house broken into, something violated them to where they think they need a gun now. There's a lot of those people out there too. So that's another different scenario too for them to pick up this tool that could potentially save their life and give them that peace of mind.
So great point about the playing the what if game. I always say when we teach, we work a lot, as I say, with hospitals. We teach workplace violence prevention. Probably, I don't know, 50,000 civilians a year that we have interaction with in teaching them how to de-escalate situation and defend themselves. And one thing I always tell them is, I would like to think that everybody would leave this 8-hour class and go find a self-defense school and join it. Invest in yourself, keep training. Reality is, maybe one or two of you will, maybe if I'm lucky. So the next best thing is playing the what if game, because we have plenty of research that proves that the brain doesn't know the difference between reality and imagination, right? And we always use the example of athletes that are sidelined, right? And they keep playing their sport and they come back and they're better than they were before because they've got thousands of repetitions in, right? So same thing with shooting, right? I use an example. I hate Baltimore City. I try not to go there whenever I can avoid it. But there's one intersection, if I do have to go down there, as you get into the city and there's all these squeegee boys there. And a few years ago, that became my trigger. Whenever I'm there and I stuck at that light, I play the what if game. What happens if somebody comes and sticks a gun to my face right now? Do I shoot them? Do I drive? Do I give them the car? And it depends. Variables are always different. If my kids are in the car, I can't give them the car. If the backdrop is not permissive, I can't shoot. If my car is boxed in, I can't drive. So that's always changing. And the hope is that when, God forbid, if this actually ever happens, my brain is more likely to react appropriately because it's been there before. It knows the drill.
Yeah, let's avoid Baltimore, everybody. You know, my son was, I think we took him there. He was like two. No, he's less than two. And we're staying at the Harbor, one of the Marriott or one of those hotels. And all of a sudden we hear, bap, 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 2 a.m. We're like, oh my gosh. I look out, cars are squealing. So everybody, if you get a chance, avoid Baltimore.
It's funny. My wife wanted to take our littlest to the zoo last week. I said, no problem. I said, I'm coming if you're going. You're not going alone. So I start getting my get out of hell bag, you know, my small bag together. I got all these extra ammo rounds. I got my small plate carrier stuffed under the seat. I got my bigger gun, not my smaller gun. And she's like, what are you doing? I said, get ready to go to the zoo in Baltimore. You know, it is what it is, you know.
Two different zoos.
I had to plan my route accordingly to avoid certain areas. So I literally treated it as almost like a convoy, preparing for first a convoy exercise to go there, a protection detail when I was there for my wife and kid, and then another extraction convoy on the way home. So, and I kid you not, Jason, I drove with my firearm in my hand the entire time.
Yeah, that place, everybody, you know, I'm not saying Baltimore is bad, but Baltimore's bad, man. That's what I'm
saying. As a military history major, Baltimore is a very historic city. Yes. With so much history and potential, and it's unfortunate that it's deteriorated to what it is, because now we and future generations are missing out on the history potential of that city. You know, the Star Spangled Banner was written there, you know, Francis Scott Key, and so many other things, and it's just lost in the shadows of the incompetent leadership and the violence, you know.
Well, let me tell you something. Masana Tactical has a lot going on right now. And I really like this idea of the training at the civilian level and training civilians. I want to go down there. I'm going to take a course with you guys. Then we're going to come back. We're going to do another show. But one thing is, everybody check out MasanaTactical.com. But before we take off, because you guys have training tonight, training, and everybody's always training.
Yeah, I got three classes I'm going to be teaching, and then I'm out of the game for surgery for a while. So.
Well, you know, brother, I appreciate it. And I'm glad I got to meet you guys over at the Gun Tree Range. I haven't met BK in person yet, but I did meet Steve. I'm excited about this pod. Are you guys going to do a podcast? Are you going to do seminars? Are you going to do with this gray?
With Silver Savage.
Silver Savage. I liked it. Is that what the name is going to be? Silver Savage? I love it.
It's been registered a couple of years ago because, again, silver hair and savages. So that was the goal. The initial idea was just a podcast. But we had enough people of interest that we're looking into doing events as well. So, as I said, retreats, just socials, get-togethers. But I think as a community, we have a lot to learn from each other. And you guys both said it on and on today. It's all about the relationships, right?
I could see, like, you know, get together, do some shooting, and have a couple beers at the end, you know, yeah. Or a nice savage type drink, whatever. You don't have to drink. You have to drink booze.
Some antacid pills afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Some Bengay, antacid, Tums, massage chair. Oh, maybe we're thinking like massage chairs and stuff like that. And,
I like it.
But yeah.
Wheels are turning.
Silver Savage. And also, everybody, check out Masada Tactical. We'll be collaborating here in the future, doing some shooting, do some talking. And I'm really looking forward. I'm glad we got the link up, guys.
Likewise. Thank you for the opportunity.
Definitely a pleasure, Jason.